So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 20, The Dynasty of Puru, Texts 17, 18, 19, and 20. There's nothing on the screen today. Maybe it's coming on momentarily here. I don't know what's going to be on the screen. Whatever's on the screen is what we'll chant. Usually we chant the first verse. Yeah. Some temples they put all the, but we'll just do the first verse today. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Amoghavirya Raja Rishi Mahishyam Viryam Adadhe Shva Bhute Sva Puram Yata Kalena Asuta Sa Sutam Amoghavira Rajashir Mahishyang Viryam Adadhe Shvabhute Svapurang Yata Kalena Sutta Sa Sutam Amoghavira Rajashir Mahishyang Viryam Adadhe Shvabhute Svapurang Yata Kalena Sutta Sasutam Mahishyam Viryam Adadhe Sabhute Svaparam Yata Najarshir Shvabhute Svaparam Yata Kalene Sutta Sasutam Amoghavirya Rajarshir Mahishyang Viryam Adadhe Shvabhute Svaparang Yata Kalinasutta Sasutam Moghavirya Rajarshir Visham Viryam Adadhe Svabhute Svaparam Yata Kalina Sutta Sasutam Amoghavirya Rajarshir Mahishyam Viryam Adadhe Svabhute Svaparam Yata Kalina Sutta Sasutam Ladies Amoghavirya Rajarshir Mahishyam Viryam Adadhe Sabhute Svaparam Yata Kalina Sutta Sasutam Amoghavirya Rajarshir Mahishyam Viryam Adadhe Shvabhute Svaparam Yata Kalina Sutta Sasutam Amoghavirya Rajarshir Mahishyam Viryam Adadhe Shvabhute Svaparam Yata Kalinatstutta sasutam amogavirya. A person who discharges semen without being baffled, or in other words, who must beget a child. Raja Rishi, the saintly king Dushmanta, Mahishyam, into the queen Shakuntala. After her marriage, Shakuntala became the queen. Viryam, semen, adadhe, placed, shva, bhute, in the morning, svapuram, to his own place, yata, returned, kalena, in due course of time, asuta, gave birth, sa, she, Shakuntala, sutam, to a son. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. King Dushmanta, who never discharged semen without a result, placed his semen at night in the womb of his queen, Shakuntala, and in the morning he returned to his palace. Thereafter, in due course of time, Shakuntala gave birth to a son. Text 18. Kanva Kumar Rashavane Chakre Samuchita Kriya Padva Mrigendram Tadasa Kridati Sma Balakaha. In the forest, Kanva Muni performed all the ritualistic ceremonies concerning the newborn child. Later, the boy became so powerful that he could capture a lion and play with it. Text 19. Tang Deratyaya Vikrantam Adaya Pramodotama Harver Ashvangshang Shasam Bhutang Bartur Antikam Agamat. Shakuntala, the best of beautiful women, along with her son, whose strength was insurmountable and who was a partial expansion of the Supreme Godhead, approached her husband Dushmanta. Text 20. Yadana Jagrihe Raja Barya Putra Vanindatau Shinvatang Sarvabhutanang Kevag Aha Sharinini. When a king refused to accept his wife and son, who were both irreproachable, an unembodied voice spoke from the sky as an omen and was heard by everyone present. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Dushmanta knew that Shakuntala and the boy were his own wife and son. But because they came from outside and were unknown to the citizens, he at first declined to accept them. Shakuntala, however, was so chaste that an omen from the sky declared the truth so that others could hear. When everyone heard from the omen that Shakuntala and her child were truly the king's wife and son, the king gladly accepted them. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Bhadijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shimishakan Vitam Shcha Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine. So just see the power of chastity, the power of purity, We've oftentimes heard that purity is the force, and indeed it is a fact. Just like it is explained by Srila Prabhupada in his purport, that when one becomes absolutely pure in his chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, when he becomes completely free from all offense, he becomes Jagat Guru, and under his influence, the whole world takes up Krishna consciousness. So we should never underestimate the power of purity. There is actually unlimited power within purity. Now we are disempowered by our impurities, varying degrees of impurities. We are covered. So this is a great impetus for us, actually. We have a desire that the world should become Krishna conscious, and we will be empowered to Krishnize it to the extent that we have Krishnized ourselves. So it's a great impetus for us, and for our own benefit and for the benefit of the fallen souls of this planet, to become more and more chaste, more and more pure, more and more powerful in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada always wanted during the initiation lectures that the 10 offenses would also be mentioned, because if you simply chant 16 rounds and follow 4 regular principles, you can take many births if you don't become offenseless in your chanting. So this is an important thing. If you can take it off. If I really need it, I have a flashlight for emergency read. So, then how do we get from point A to point B, you see? Here we are in our impure state, we're not completely purified, we're trying to get purified. How do we get out of this rut that we're in right now, that contaminated by the modes of nature, and get to that pure state of Shuddha Bhakti? This is what Sadhana Bhakti is all about, you see, how to get there. Well, Prabhupada has given us everything how to do that. So we have to have, first of all, we have to have complete faith. That's the first thing. That we have to work on. We're even weak in that department. Prabhupada told us right here in Los Angeles, he said, Krishna lived to govern on hill, and you were thinking, maybe. You see. So we have to work on our faith also. Our shaky faith. Yes, Krishna is God. God is not a myth. God is real. You see. We have to that faith comes by regularly hearing from the scriptures, by regularly hearing from realized devotees, regularly hearing from the wonderful lectures of Srila Prabhupada. We can hear the recordings, you see. You hear the faith, you hear from those who have faith, and that gives you faith. Faith is a contagious disease. So we hear from those who have strong faith, and that helps us to become stronger in our faith. So by increasing our faith, by associating with the saintly devotees of the Lord, the ISKCON devotees, by following the aspects of Bhakti Yoga given by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and given again in the Nectar of Devotion in Chapter 6, those 64 items of the three most important being shelter, diksha, and obedience. If we follow these items very sincerely, very dedicatedly, at every minute, you see, trying to keep ourselves fixed in Krishna consciousness, understanding the material energy is powerful and we are weak and we can be hit any time. We have to be very, very vigilant, just like a soldier guarding on guard duty, you see. He's looking for the enemy. He's there with his gun ready if the enemy attacks. He'll shoot immediately if the enemy attacks. So we have to be like a soldier on guard duty, you see. Maya can sneak in with some lusty thought, some greedy thought, some angry thought, immediately shoot it down, you see, with transcendental knowledge. Get out, you see. We have to be like that. It's called Goswami, you see, one who controls the mind. If you let your mind loose, it's called Godas. Loose means loser. You see? If you're loose, you'll be a loser. But if you're strict, you'll be a winner. We had to be strict. Prabhupada personally wrote me, he said, disciple means discipline. It means if I'm not disciplining myself, I'm not controlling my mind, I'm not controlling my words, I'm not controlling my actions, I'm not really a disciple even. It's a disciple in name only. I'm not really a disciple, you see. So, disciple I must be. I've taken the vow of initiation. I've pledged, Srila Prabhupada, I will be your disciple forever. I will always discipline myself according to your orders. Now I must keep my word, otherwise I'm not even a human being. Or to speak of being a devotee, I'm not even a human being if I don't keep my word, you see. So in this way, just by being honest, I made that commitment to my Guru Maharaj. I made that commitment. And now I must keep my word, that's all. Simply, if one can be honest enough to keep your pledge, keep your word, you've given it, now you keep it. Don't be duplicitous. Don't be a rascal. You've given the word, now you keep your word, you see. Simply that honesty will bring one all the way to the pure state of Shuddha Bhakti in due course of time. That state is a very wonderful state. We hear about it. How amazing that state is, where Krishna personally reveals himself to the devotee. So we should endeavor like anything to achieve that pure state of bhakti, pure bhakti. We will be happy. We can make the world happy. So why are we not fully embracing that? Why are we still trying to eat vomit, vantasi, vomit eaters? Why are we still running after the vomit? It's crazy, but we still do that in our minds. We run after the vomit. We want to eat some vomit. Simply due to the materialistic atmosphere. And the fact that we have been addicted to material sense gratification since time immemorial, that addiction doesn't go away easily. It sits very deep in the heart. It's not at the greatest depth of the heart, of course. It's not in the deepest portion of the heart. It is deep in the heart, but the whole idea is you got to go deeper than that deep-seated lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy, and fear. You have to go deeper than that, you see. You go even deeper than that deep-seated contamination, you will find the deep-seated purity, the natural condition, as we've many times explained. And the fire is dormant within the match. You simply strike it, and the fire comes blazing out, you see. So that fire of pure bhakti, it is there, deep, deep, deep within the heart. Actually, all you have to do to be satisfied is to reignite that original love of God in the heart. A devotee who's purely fixed in Krishna consciousness, he can be happy in any situation. It doesn't matter. He can be in the hellish planets, the heavenly planets. He can be in Goloka Vrindavan. He can be anywhere, even in Los Angeles. And be completely ecstatic, you see, at every minute. It's just a matter of reconnecting with Krishna. It's just a matter of what's called Krishna consciousness. You've heard that term before, Krishna consciousness. Yeah. It's just a matter of being Krishna conscious, really. It's that simple. Simple for the simple, as we've many times heard, and difficult for the crooked. Well, if I'm having difficulty in Krishna consciousness, what does that mean? I'm embracing crookedness. When I'm having difficulty, I'm embracing crookedness. So I have to give up being a crook and become a simple devotee. That's how I'll become fixed in Krishna consciousness, you see. So kick out the crookedness. Embrace simplicity. This is the motto, you see. Kick out crookedness and embrace simplicity. The yogis, they endeavor with great struggle to raise the life air to the top of the head. And this way they want to enter into samadhi, a state of trance. But that state, it's not that great, really, because they either fall back and they fall down, as we see that when Yogi, he fell back down. They make the mistake of thinking they are that supreme, fall into Mayavadi and personal consciousness. So that rigid Ashtanga system, it is not very, very fruitful, actually, compared to the Bhakti Yoga system. The Bhakti Yoga system is very simple. You simply think about Krishna, you talk about Krishna, you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari, and you act for Krishna, you see. Yat karoshi yadashnasi yajdahosi dadasi yat tapashashi kontaya tat karishva madarpanam. Simply by this acting, thinking, speaking, and chanting Krishna, 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 then the devotee becomes situated in an undisturbed state of transcendental trance. That's where we want to be, you see. We want to be in that undisturbed state where no material thoughts can penetrate. Even if they come, let them go, you see. Just like so many rivers enter into the ocean. But the ocean always maintains the same level. So devotee, even some material thought comes, he doesn't grab onto it, he doesn't try to enter into it. Here it comes, let it go, you see. Here it comes, let it go. Doesn't grab, oh, here's some thought. Let me enjoy this lusty thought. Here it comes. Let it go. Bye. Hello. Goodbye. Get out of here. You see. So in this way, even if someone who is actually tasting the nectar of Krishna's name, some other thought may come, but it's not attractive to him anymore. Not attractive to him. Therefore, it easily goes away. Because he has full faith that just by absorbing in Krishna, 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 there's unlimited nectar. There's so much nectar in Krishna's name that one pure utterance of Krishna has more nectar, more juice, more rus, more pleasure that you can experience in anything in the material world, all the way from the higher planets to the lower planets. For millions of years of trying to enjoy in this material world, even with the heavenly damsels in the upper regions, nothing compares to the sweet nectar found in one pure utterance of Krishna. So we just have to learn really how to meditate, how to chant Hare Krishna meditatively. Not get it over, not in a matter of getting it over, but in a matter of diving deep, deep, deep into Nam Ras, you see. That famous quote in the introduction to the old songbook, there is no safe position in this material world except for Kirtan Ras, you see. That ecstasy of chanting the name of the Lord is the only safe position we have here. Confirmed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there is nothing but the name to be had in all the 14 worlds. So somehow or other, we just have to drive out all of this confusion, delusion that's been bombarding us for millions of lifetimes, and just grab very, very tightly onto Krishna's holy name, very, very tightly onto the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna, you see. In this way, just become completely liberated from all the crud, all the madness, the insanity, the delusion, the confusion, everything that's been torturing us for so many millions and billions of lifetimes. Such a long time we've suffered here, unnecessarily. We could have come out of it immediately, but we are embracing the illusion that we can enjoy separately from the Supreme. This was our craziness, our insanity. Now we have this great opportunity. We should not miss this opportunity. We should take this opportunity now to become perfect and get out of this vicious cycle of birth and death and get back to Krishna. It's so sublime process. Just try to love Krishna, that's all. Just try to love Krishna. And as Vishnujan used to sing, Vishnujan Swami, instead of giving your love to a dog or a cat, why don't you love Krishna who made all of that? So let's cash in on this mercy that Prabhupada is giving us. Unlimited oceans of mercy Prabhupada is showering on our heads. Let's put away the umbrellas and take fully of that mercy of Prabhupada into our consciousness. Fully absorb that mercy of Prabhupada into our consciousnesses. You see? This is intelligence. Otherwise we're just idiots. You see? What good is mechanically chanting Krishna, Krishna? And we have to learn to chant with love. Prabhupada gives the example of the parrot. You can teach him to go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But when the cat catches by the neck, caw, 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 no more Krishna. You see? Actually, I've seen one parrot in Fiji. We were preaching on a little tropical island called Tavayuni. Devotees had a parrot there in the backyard. He was going, Haribo, Haribo, Haribo. You see? Actually, he was just saying, feed me, feed me, feed me. That's all he's really saying. You see? So I'm chanting like a parrot. That's not going to work. You got to chant understanding Krishna is the Supreme Lord and I have to connect with him in love. I have to develop my affection for him. Krishna is personally fully present. This is not just a sound vibration. This is an incarnation of Krishna. He's dancing on my tongue. As confirmed by Srila Prabhupada, Krishna is actually dancing on my tongue. My dirty tongue is being blessed by the supreme, all-pure personality of Godhead. So let me fully accept Krishna and fully embrace him in my heart. Is my dearmost object of love and affection. Is it? Krishna is beautiful. He's powerful. He's renounced. He's wealthy. He's famous. He's wise. He's all the opulent things of this world that attract us. They are fully reposed in Krishna unlimitedly. So why run after a perverted reflection when you can get the real thing? This is Krishna consciousness. Is it? Why run after some illusory mirage in a desert when you can get the real thing, the oasis? Is it? This is intelligent. So it's time to wise up. Get out of the slums of material consciousness. Move uptown. To a better neighborhood, Krishna consciousness. That is our Krishna consciousness process. So perhaps there's some questions. Yeah, you may have to help me with my hearing again. Yeah.
In the beginning of you were speaking, you were saying that when someone has difficulties in Krishna consciousness, it's because he's being crooked. And if someone becomes simple, then he remains steady. So I just had a question, that what if someone's not being crooked, but someone's going through an artha navritti and having difficulties, can't that also be a factor?
Yeah, but the thing is that it's not that they're really a crook, but they're getting over their crookedness. You see what I'm saying? We were all it was crooked mentality that brought us here. So our difficulties mean we still haven't... One may be a simple devotee who's sincerely trying to awaken his Krishna consciousness, but the difficulties are due to that residual crookedness which is still being gradually purged out of the heart. You understand? Yeah. He's a simple devotee. He's honestly, sincerely trying, and he's going through difficulties. Not that he's a crook, but he's still dealing with that residual crookedness which has polluted him. He's, you know, trying to get rid of it. Doesn't go away instantly. You see, it takes a lifetime of practice. Could take many lifetimes of practice. But, you know, he's a sincere devotee, but he's trying to purge out that crooked mentality which had kept him entangled. And does that make it clear? Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any more questions? Bhagavate Prabhu.
John, thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a purport where Prabhupada says how we should try to follow the example of Haridas Thakur of chanting in front of Tulsi with a vow. And Prabhupada makes the point that if we chant 16 rounds with a vow in front of the Tulsi plant, that the process has such great spiritual potency that simply by doing that one can become spiritually strong and that it has immense spiritual potency and one should not miss this opportunity. So what if one is thinking like this, that okay, I don't feel it to chant with love, you know, or devotion, but I have faith in that instruction and I'll chant with determination with the hope that, you know, Prabhupada's words are true. The process has great spiritual potency. It has immense spiritual potency. And I'll just leave the rest to the fact that, you know, the holy name will do the rest. I'll just chant with determination and everything else will happen. I don't have to make any extra attempt to chant, you know, with love. I just have to do that instruction, execute that instruction with determination, and the glories of the holy name will...
Love, actually, it is your love that you're chanting with determination. Also, that's a manifestation of your love. But the thing is, even if the love and feelings are not there, as Prabhupada told one of our God sisters, he said, when you chant, feel the presence of Krishna. If you can't do that, then just fix your mind on the name. So, you know, there's plan A and plan B. If we don't feel any love, then we should chant with determination. Because that will eventually bring us to the point where the love feelings will gradually awaken. They're already there. They just have to be clean. You just have to clean away the dirt and the love will come out. It's already there. You're already a pure devotee, Prabhu. But it's covered by all this lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. Determined chanting is just cleaning the mirror of the mind. And once the mirror is clean, then the pure love is there. It's already there. It's just a matter of being covered. Determined chanting is cleaning it off. But actually, you can also pray, Krishna, please bless me. I can learn how to love you. You can beg Krishna directly. Of course, chanting actually, Hare Krishna is begging Krishna. Please let me love you purely. You see, please bless me. My pure love for you can become fully manifest. Actually, Hare Krishna means that. We're praying to Radha and Krishna in that way, that we can come back to that original pure loving mood in our relationship with them. That make it clear?
Yeah, thank you.
Next question.
Thank you very much for your nice class. Is Maharaj Dushmanta and his wife are on the same platform like Kadama Muni and Devahuti or not? Because the son is a partial incarnation of Krishna. Can you clarify it?
I'm not an expert on these personalities, Dushanta and Sukhandala. Not an expert to know all the details about them. I can't say. Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful class, as usual. I also have a question, specific question about the verse. And I'm wondering if there is some instruction within it, because it says that King Dushmanta refused to accept his wife and child because they were unknown to the citizens. And it took an actual voice from the sky to announce that the wife and child were his son and wife before he would accept them. And we also know from the pastime of Lord Ramachandra that he took so seriously the opinions of the citizens that he was ruling over, that that was one of the impetuses for him to give up his Sita, his eternal consort. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, is there some instruction that we can imbibe from this in light of a person who's, you know, has followers or subjects,
yeah,
and in terms of their, you know, some opinion they have? I mean, how much
they have to have a spotless reputation. To be a leader, you have to have a spotless reputation, you see. Just like, for example, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was talking with one of his two of his disciples, a married couple, and the girl said, "Guru Maharaj, I'd like to speak with you privately." He said, "No, that I cannot do. You can speak here in the presence of others." So certainly he would not have fallen down. It's a young girl like his granddaughter, and he's a pure devotee. He wouldn't have fallen down. But still, for the sake of maintaining a spotless reputation, he refused to speak with her privately. So we leaders have to be aware of keeping... Of course, we're not on the level of Bhaktisiddhanta. We have to be careful. We could fall down if we got loose. But for our own protection of our own sadhana and for our own... be able to execute our duties properly as a temple president, a guru, whatever our service is, we have to maintain a very good reputation, a spotless reputation. It's an important principle. Very important principle. Archita Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Sankarshan Prabhu, for encouraging us to chant with more sincerity and hoping to uncover the love that is there. I just wanted to go back to Manabhata Prabhu's question, because yes, leaders should hear from those that they're following and should be concerned about their opinion, but at the same time, to be a leader, you have to already know the answer. It's just like Srila Prabhupada. He would regularly ask his disciples, "What do you think, Rameshwar Prabhu? What do you think, you know, so-and-so?" He'd ask them regularly what their opinion on different topics, but it doesn't mean that he was trying to poll them to come to a conclusion. He already knew the conclusion. So there's a difference between leaders who are trying to run a democracy and, you know, take the count of the vote. Okay, 51% thinks this and 40%. The pure devotee is not like that. They already know the answer, but they want to encourage and engage everyone. So they do ask, "What do you think?" Like in this case, Maharaj Dushmanta, he already knew Shakuntala and his son were, you know, it's not that he was waiting for the citizens to rubber stamp them as being okay. He knew that they were okay. But it's for the sake of the citizens, that they don't walk around confused, that he allowed this situation to unfold so that the oracle could speak and everything would be clear. But he already knew the answer. He wasn't waiting to poll them to come to a conclusion. You see the point? So Prabhupada, when he engaged his disciples, he was not waiting to take a poll. Okay, 50% of my disciples think this and 75% think that. He already knew the answer. But he wanted to encourage and engage them. Therefore, he always consulted. He asked them, "Brahmananda, what do you think? What do you think, you know, Vishwajan Maharaj?" He would always ask them questions, but he already knew the answer.
Question? Thank you very much, Archita Prabhu, for sharing that with us. Any other questions? Yeah.
Just going back to the answer that Archita gave and the question that he made, is it little bit wouldn't be a little bit dangerous to equate the leadership of Prabhupada and somebody else being a leader at the present time and taking that position that he knows everything?
Let me get a catch up. I'm not catching everything.
Oh, I see. Okay, I'm sorry. I take it back then. Okay, yeah.
What is that? Okay. There's a question here. I saw Prabhu with his hand up. Yeah.
Prabhu, reviewing the story, it's like the king sees this lady in the forest, and he's like enchanted with his beauty, with her beauty, and proposes to her. She replies with silence. He chants Om, that's the marriage, and impregnates her, then leaves. And then years after that, you know, he refuses to accept them. It sounds pretty mundane. It's like it sounds like what happens nowadays. You know what I mean? It doesn't sound like a Raja Rishi. What differentiates between the two?
Interesting question. Is this some mundane thing? No. This is obviously, this is a great king. The kings have certain dharma that they're allowed to have more than one wife, for example. That this is in the Bhagavatam, this is not some ordinary thing like people, you know, getting together and having illicit sex. Certainly not. How could we think that way? These are great personalities, and great Vedic kings. How could they be the same as something here? Some, you know, some people having illicit relationship over on Venice Beach or something. How could we think such a thing? We have faith in what Prabhupada has given us, the Bhagavatam. These are not ordinary personalities. They're great personalities. It's not that we can imitate them also. Yeah.
What about the situation of apsaras? We hear in stories that the apsaras from heavenly planets... Sometimes they come down, they have children, and they leave them. They abandon them. It appears that they're not accountable. Are they not subjected to any rules of the earth?
The thing is, everyone, even the heavenly planets, they're also entangled within the material nature, you see. Just being on the heavenly planets doesn't mean you're free from the entanglement of the material energy. In this material world, we're all entangled. That's why we're not interested in the heavenly planets. And it became becoming an apsara in the heavenly planets. We have no interest in such things. We want to get out of this place. Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartinarjuna mamupechirakonteya punarjanmanavidyate. These are all places of misery. You know, we don't understand any of this stuff. Whatever they're doing, they're getting also reactions of some degree. They're not pure devotees. The denizens of the heavenly planets. They're getting there also. Their different sort of reactions. They may have different standards than we have, but they certainly are not free from karma. We don't aspire to become apsaras. Get some more pleasure. I can get my pleasure without being in suffering. You see, I remember when Amarendra came back from Mayapur, he told me what Prabhupada had been talking about, how they, in the heavenly planets, they can have sex a whole life with no pregnancy, but until the very end, before leaving their bodies, they give birth. They get to have unlimited sex pleasure with no pregnancy. You see? Well, we're not innocent in such thing. You see, we don't care about sex pleasure. It's just nasty, disgusting business. We don't care. We need sex pleasure. You know, It's just like blowing your nose or something. It's a gross bodily function, you know, blowing some mucus out of your nose. What's the difference between passing semen and blowing some mucus out of your nose? It's just a gross bodily function. We don't care for this garbage. We just want Krishna and pure love for Krishna. That's all. Isn't it? Yeah. Anything else? Y'all are satisfied now? Ready for pure bhakti? Kijai! Srila Prabhupada Kijai! Haribo! Thank you very much.